welcome to the Resistance Rewind, a podcast that rewinds and reviews films from the past, but keeps its feet firmly planted in the current events of today. I am your host, Chad Franks, and today we have a special Christmas episode for you guys. I know a lot of people think Christmas is about family or something corny about that, but really for me, it's a lot about materialism, consumerism, you know, really buying your happiness. But to go against that trend, I thought, you know, let's change things up and really kind of do what some people think the Christmas holiday is about, and that's about family. So I decided to join me today for this podcast. I invited Dr. Lauren Franks onto this podcast. She, if you're curious about the Franks part, she is my wife, actually. So I have.
That's true.
Yeah, that is right. So she is a clinical psychologist, and I'm going to have that tie into what we're going to talk about here today. That is quite an accomplishment that she's been able to achieve in her life. I'm very, very proud of her and really excited to have her on this podcast. But that is that accomplishment pales in comparison to the fact that she has to put up with me on a daily basis. So she deserves a lot of praise for that beyond her work that she does. So, but I'm really happy to have you on here, babe. Thanks for joining the Resistance.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah.
I get to hear the podcast and pretty pumped to actually be on it this time. I am also really excited to talk about a Christmas movie because Christmas is pretty much the best thing ever.
So that's why I was really excited too. Like if we get to do a holiday episode, I get to do it with my favorite family member. Is it bad to say that?
I think it's good to say that.
Exactly, yeah. And so, if you know my wife, if you know anything about her, she loves Christmas. And I'm really, it's funny, we talk a lot about, you know, really the meaning of the holidays. And this podcast gets really political from time to time, but we also really like to talk about American culture. And I think there's a lot maybe going on that's still relevant today that we can tie into politics. But I'm, like I said, I'm really excited to get into that. So let's go and do that. But before we do that, let's go ahead and just for if you're a first time listener, what we do here on the Resistance Rewind is we review older films that are no longer in theaters and we discuss their relevancy or lack thereof in today's social climate. We're here to resist the notion that movies are just mere entertainment. I personally think that they're a great starting point for great conversations and they can also spread cheer. And maybe actually some sincere holiday cheer this time of year. We don't want movies to just be shallow and in the background. I mean, they can really teach you a lesson. I know I learn a lot, and I'm learning more and more. The movie that we're going to talk about today is a movie I've seen a lot.
It's a really deep one.
It's super deep.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But every time I watch it, I actually learned a lot from watching it today. So today we're going to unwind, rewind, and review National Lampoon's A Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
Exactly. So there were a lot of movies we really wanted to talk about, because we love Christmas movies here. Mm-hmm. But we were like, which one do we think just can inform how we look at our culture today? I mean, those of us, like we've talked about on this podcast before, there were a lot of us that were kind of reeling after the election, wondering, like, how on earth could we get to this point where we elected somebody, like Donald Trump, who to me is a lot like a Grinch or I almost said Scrooge McDuck earlier, but just Scrooge. But we thought those would be too on the nose. And like I said, we're trying to get a little deeper than just like calling out, him being a movie villain or people that maybe we disagree with in politics, whether it be him or somebody else, mm-hmm. Just somebody you disagree with and make him this cartoon character. So it was kind of, so we thought, hey, let's go ahead and maybe do Christmas Vacation and talk about materialism and American consumerism. And this is something that actually Lauren has talked about and we've talked about a lot as parents. So we have two kids. So
Yeah, I think just this idea of needing items to be satisfied mm-hmm. is just way over the top, especially in our culture and the United States. And I think that it's really highlighted when you get to this time of the year.
Absolutely.
And everyone is focusing on gifts and shopping, and we start seeing commercials and advertisements before Halloween, all trying to tell us that the most important part of the season is the things we purchase.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with that, so I think we should have plenty to discuss today.
Awesome, yeah. So that's why we ended up landing on National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I mean, I've loved this movie since I was a kid. My dad showed me this movie, and in my mind, I can just like hear him cackling at some of the things going on in this movie. But it was kind of cool to revisit it. Lauren and I had our notepads out. It's the first time I got to watch like with a guest that I was going to have on, like right next to me, and like we discussed the film. It was really fun. It was really cool.
It's great. I had a little flashbacks to grad school.
Yeah,
doing my research. answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, but it was kind of fun to, yeah, this movie's a comedy, you know, it's supposed to be really shallow, but I mean, there, I think there is a lot like in the imagery and maybe some subliminal stuff we'll get into that like they're putting in there. But yeah, so this movie came out in 1989. Lauren and I were less than just around a year old when this movie came out, but it's still like, I mean, people still watch this movie. It's one of those movies like A Christmas Story, or you know, like even older, some older movies too. That, I mean, Christmas movies, they're timeless. Sometimes you watch them over and over again, so many years. So this one kind of fit in the theme of that. And there's some things I think that it hits the mark on. Like, I think it really gets the idea that Christmas is supposed to be more than just like gifts and materialism. But there's also things I think it falls short of and actually plays right into that. So we'll go ahead and get into that. So if you haven't seen the movie, I recommend it. I think it is one of the holiday classics. I think it's probably always on the list of top 10 films. It came out in 1989. It stars Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Juliette Lewis, and Jonathan Galecki, which I didn't realize till watching this time, which I've seen this movie like, no joke, more than 20, 30 times probably in my life, that's the guy from The Big Bang Theory. And Lauren's like, hey, that's the guy from The Big Bang Theory. So, but yeah, there's a lot of big stars in this movie too, especially when you get into who's playing the parents and stuff. We can't forget Randy Quaid is in this movie. God rest his soul. I know he's still alive, but he's not in America anymore. He's like hiding off somewhere. Okay. Anyway, but something too, in doing my research about this movie, I didn't know this until we were doing research. John Hughes of, you know, Pretty in Pink and all those great 80s movies and everything. Breakfast Club, he wrote this movie.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
I didn't know that either.
Learning something new every day. But anyway, so we'll go ahead and let me give you a quick synopsis for those of you who don't know this one. I'll read the IMDb synopsis. The Griswold family plans for a big family Christmas, and predictably it turns into a big disaster. So I like it because it's just very brief. But yeah, like go ahead and check out this movie and we'll go ahead and dive into some of it. Some of the themes. So Lauren, do you find this movie to be pretty relevant today, or why also did you want to kind of talk about it on this podcast? Like, why do you think it's just not a shallow movie? Why do you think maybe people should be talking about the themes in this movie?
Yeah, I definitely think it's relevant today. I think that the culture around Christmas hasn't shifted a whole lot in terms of the consumer side of things or the sales side of things. I think that people don't always stop and realize the kind of gravity of the costs of what they're doing. And I don't mean cost in a money sense, but in kind of a consequence sort of way, where people aren't realizing that the amount of money they are spending could be better invested in other places. I think people aren't realizing that the amount of trash they're producing in the world is an environmental issue because of all of the things they are purchasing and not fixing or not sharing or not just letting go because they don't need to buy that in the first place. And so I think that seeing this movie and knowing from past viewings of this movie how focused Clark is on this bonus, and this Christmas bonus is kind of the apex of the whole thing, as we're surrounding this Christmas bonus and what's it going to be and is it going to be enough for his, you know, brand new pool that he wants to buy. It just really epitomizes the focus, the misplaced focus people have on things and money and how important that all is.
Yeah. I even think the way the movie starts out and Clark is on this quest for a big tree, you know what I mean? Like, he has to have this massive tree. Because I think there's a lot in this movie too. It's funny because Lauren and I came at this movie in two different ways, and I really appreciate what she has to say a lot about like consumerism and things that we just feel like we need to buy our happiness. And it's funny too, she talks about like environmentalism. This is a woman that like whenever we're buying something, or she's like, man, but eventually this is just going to end up in a landfill. And she talks about that. I'm like, that's something I never think about. You know what I mean? I just don't even think about like the repercussions that we have. And she's really active in, you know, like buying things secondhand. There's like a community that she has on social media that there's a lot of moms, like local moms, that they are buying and trading and selling all this stuff just instead of like throwing it away, you know. And it's I think it's really great because for some reason they have to have this big brand new big thing. And same thing with Clark. He goes out and like literally cuts down this beautiful evergreen tree.
Well, he doesn't cut it, remember?
Oh,
he
that's
forgets
right.
The saw.
That's right. He forgets it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is probably even worse. He probably messes with the ecosystem more than it has to be. But you're right. And so, oh my gosh, but it's like, but he has to have that. It's a big deal. It's not just about like, even though I think he really wants to be, he wants Christmas to be deeper. I don't think but I think that's kind of why I think it's such an interesting movie, because he kind of is the everyman. You know, like he has this, like, you know, people can kind of relate to him and they can, you know, really want to, they want Christmas to be a big deal. You know, I think they want, but I think he kind of misses the mark a little bit in lots of ways, in comical ways, you know, so. Yeah.
And I think that's why it's important to bring up, because like I said, it's stuff that people don't notice they're doing. It's not like people are out there maliciously thinking,
sure,
how can I damage the planet by purchasing more, you know, non-biodegradable items?
Yeah.
I don't think people are out there doing that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it's not an issue.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So that's, but yeah, so watching this movie, and I mean, we still laughed a lot, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I never really realized, having watched this film when I was a kid. Once again, another common theme in the show is like, I can't believe like my parents let me watch some of these movies at the age that I watched them. But yeah, I just, a lot of the stuff kind of went over my head. I'm watching like, oh no, I get like, yeah, like Clark is not a villain. You know, mm-hmm. he's not like a bad guy. Like, obviously you don't really want to model. I don't think you're parenting or... I would say husbandry, but that's something totally different. But being a spouse, you don't want to model it after him. But I think his heart is really in the right place. So that's kind of, I don't know. But I think a lot, that's, I think, isn't that all of us though? I think in a lot of ways, like, I'm really bad at this, you know, myself. I mean, I'm not sitting here calling out other people, and I'm not calling out Americans for being, you know, in too much into consumerism. I'm that way myself, you know.
Oh,
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying that I never buy things brand new.
Oh, sure.
I definitely do. So yeah, we're not trying to be hypocritical.
Yeah. In any sense. That's why we're like, we're hoping like it reflects like a bigger theme that maybe we can like think, yeah, right. I don't think about it. But that's why I think Clark is a great audience like surrogate here, because yeah, he's not totally, you know, he's not evil, but like, yeah, he's definitely, he's missing the mark, even though I think he's trying really hard. So, but while we were talking too, I think we drew a lot of parallels, or I did. I drew a lot of parallels between, we're talking about Clark kind of being like the guys, maybe men in the audience. And I'd like to talk to you more about maybe some other movies that maybe do different perspectives later on. But at least as a guy, like, I think a lot of people, they relate to him, like, trying to do the right thing. I think, like, you know, he wants a pool so he can, like, have fun with his family. You know, it's not like he wants, like, some sports car or something that he can just go drive around and pick up chicks or something like that. So at least, like, again, it's like he's close to the right.
I don't think Clark would be upset if that came into his life.
Yeah, I know. That's true, as we saw from the movie. Yeah, I can't believe it. But anyway, yeah, so it's just like, but yeah,
but
I would still say, overall,
I agree.
But I was trying to think of like other parallels, and one of the things that just kind of really jumped out to me while watching this film is like, you see the boss. So his boss in the movie is, you know, obviously this like almost cartoon character villain, like mm-hmm. 80s like businessman kind of thing. And that was really common, like, you know, especially you watch the 80s, maybe early 90s, a lot of the villains were these big business types. And they were like, you know, like it were evil, and it was just really easy to hate on these guys. But what was just freaking me out while I'm watching this movie is we elected a guy like that. Like, these guys used to be our villains, you know, that we'd watch these movies and like, you know, these like big boss characters, they don't care about the little guy. Like, those were the villains, but we elected a guy that, like, again, he's not as much of a caricature like they are in the movies, but he's close to that archetype, and I think it has a lot to do with where we are as a culture, like consumerism and materialism, and like, Trump represents a type of success that people think that they either deserve or can attain. And it blows my mind. I'm watching this guy, like, we should have viewed Trump when he was running in 2016 as like this villain, you know, like, or
right. In the films you're referencing, people are seeing that role, that position as a villain. And somehow at some point things transitioned in this previous election to be that role is now something we want to aspire to be.
Yeah.
Or something we want to look up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone that we think is going to be well fit to lead kind of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. No, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
And that seems like an issue. Like something switched that shouldn't have switched.
Yeah. Where did that turn around? That's why I'm really curious, like, where we turned around in this culture that I think, like, if Donald Trump would have ran any time before 2016, he would have been viewed as this, like, business, like, you know, I don't want to use the word villain because, that's way too black and white.
Well, you know, he was able to create a lot of businesses.
Sure, sure.
And some people would say he was successful in his businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people would find points to argue otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's not to say that it's not to say that he doesn't have some sort of skills, right?
Absolutely,
he has skills, but not in the position he's become.
Yeah,
Or not in the position he's taken now. And I agree. I'm not sure where that switch.
Yeah, where that switch
happened.
I know this like might sound that Lauren really didn't. She bumped on this analogy, but I will own it. So I don't speak for her in any sense of the mean. But we're watching Randy Quaid's character in the movie, and he is, you know, a man that lives with his family, like in an RV. And, you know, yeah. It kind of comes from that social economic class. And he, like, to me, epitomizes a cartoon version of a Trump supporter, right? Like, you could see him showing up with the Make America Great Again hat to Clark's house. You know what I mean? Yeah. In my opinion. And so, but in this movie, back when this movie was you know, in the late 80s, he goes and he kidnaps, you know, like, the boss. And you see them, like, opposing each other. And that's, in my mind, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like the people that are in the position of, like, Randy Quaid's character, they should dislike someone like a Donald Trump, or they should distrust someone like a Donald Trump, like a businessman who really is out to make a buck, doesn't care about this person living with his family in an RV that doesn't have enough money to you know, buy Christmas presents. And even though we're obviously talking about that's not the important thing, but still, like, it makes sense that guy would kidnap, you know, that character. But now we've gotten to a point where not that guy wouldn't kidnap that character. He'd be like, no, this is who I want to be. Mm-hmm. He's the guy I want to live my life like. And I'm just like, I don't know if something has changed, or if it's just like the climate that we're in right now, that there's such a distrust of Washington, you want an outsider, you know? And I mean, that comes and goes. That is nowhere close to 2016. We've seen it in our own lifetime and times before that. But yeah, it just must be the current political climate that, oh, we want this outside guy that's going to drain the swamp. Mm-hmm. He's done very little to drain the swamp, in my opinion, which I find it to be ironic, because part of me was like, when he first got elected, I was like, all right, I mean, let's see if he actually does it. Let's see if he actually does do something different. And he really hasn't, at least that I've seen. But I just, back to the other point, is like, I'm looking at the people in this movie, especially from, you know, Uncle Eddie's or Cousin Eddie's character. I was like, oh, this guy's a Trump guy. You know what I mean? Like, no offense if you're a Trump guy. I'm not trying to compare you to Uncle Eddie, but really, you know, like, it's just like, that's how I see it, you know? And so, oh my gosh. And there's some epic lines that Randy Quaid has in this. I can't wait to talk about. But no, I really got, but also too, we're talking about, and I can't believe we haven't mentioned her yet. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in this movie, mm-hmm. and she plays the neighbor. Mm-hmm. And Lauren, you were saying something while we were watching the movie too, like how they're very clearly, like, you know, they're obviously opposed to Clark, but they also have their issues with materialism, and they have a very, like, you know, snooty,
absolutely,
yeah
it's interesting how there's this, like, strong juxtaposition between the values of this married couple that doesn't have kids and this married couple that does have kids and has their in-laws over and everything, where family seems to be much more of a priority for the Griswolds. But they have this common theme of being focused on being the best, having the best, you know, the lights, the massively outrageous bright lights that Clark has shined into their house causes, you know, this pristine couple to spill their wine and she's crying, my carpet, you know, like that's the end of the world. And so we can see that consumerism and prioritizing materialistic things are both, or can be seen very different ways, can be described in very different imagery, depending on what home you're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so it's just really interesting how they were, like, you know, B-level villains in this movie as well, you know what I mean? But it's not like that. I wouldn't say they're too different than Clark in a way. Yeah, that's why I think that was so interesting.
At least in the context of what we're discussing today.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's almost like that we could see two different versions of how maybe they're getting it wrong. And like I said, too, I just think it's interesting. It's like, I obviously watch it and I relate more to Clark as opposed to them, but they're still, it's like, for some reason, like, we're supposed to look at them as evil or bad, mm-hmm. and they're not too different than Clark. I mean, they're literally neighbors, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's not like they live, it's not like they're in different parts of Chicago. So this movie takes place in Chicago, and it's not like they're, like, on the south side, and Clark is, like, the everyman on the south side of Chicago, and they're the villain. It's just like, no, they're neighbors, and so not that far off, but, I mean, it's John Hughes. It has to take place in, you know, the north side of Chicago, right? So, so I think there was a lot going on in this movie that I really enjoyed. That I kind of, something too, like, we're talking about neighbors, and there's a big aspect of keeping up with the Joneses where, like, and I want to talk to you too, how you feel as maybe the role as a woman, but I know as a man in American culture right now, I do get that, like, desire that, oh man, like, my neighbors, they have that big tree, or they're clearly, like, they have that car. Like, we need to, like, put out this, like, we need to present ourselves in a certain way. There's a pressure to do that. And this movie, I think, taps into that. You know what I mean? Like, really, this guy, he wants his Christmas bonus because he's working hard, you know? Or, like, you know, he's talking about his, like, cereal varnish or whatever, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. But
non-nutritive.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, yeah. And this is like, but, you know, this guy, you know, he's got a job that, like, is not exciting, but he's doing his thing. But I get that. He wants to go and... You know, I fall short in that where I do the same thing Clark does. But we recently, you and I just saw Bad Moms 2.
Bad Moms Christmas.
That's right.
I think.
Oh, that is right. Bad Moms. And I was wondering too, because we've seen, there's been a million movies about the white male struggle to keep up with society. But I wonder, do you as a woman think, is there pressure for you at Christmas time that, like, because I think Bad Moms Christmas did a good job bringing some of that up. But do you see, like, when you watch these Christmas movies or Christmas Vacation or you know, do you feel like there's a pressure that they, or maybe movies don't do a good job doing, or vice versa? Or?
Yeah, you know, this makes me think that it might be a good time to bring up the cultural aspect too of what was portrayed in the film versus other situations. I think that we were looking at a family that was near a major metropolitan area, and we're looking at, you know, kind of this white American family. And so perhaps for people that grow up in that type of context, it is a common theme to feel like you have to keep up and you have to compete and you have to value some things more materialistically. I don't feel like I have that pressure on me personally. I don't know if that's because I am not paying attention to it. I don't know if that's because I am a woman and not a male and I'm not having that same societal pressure. I think that it could be that my parents did a pretty good job raising me and showing me that that just wasn't that important. We had plenty. I don't want to misconstrue our financial situation, but we didn't have a lot. We didn't have extra. The stuff that we did have extra, you know, as an adult, you come to find out that that was on credit or things that were not responsible financial decisions.
Sure.
And, so I don't feel that same pressure. And I think that some other families that maybe, and you know what, actually, as I'm saying this, it could go both ways. There could be families that are from other ethnic backgrounds that live in the United States and feel extra pressure that they have to compete and they have to try to prove themselves to kind of compare with that unfortunate standard that sometimes gets set in the media. But there might be other families also that are coming from something that was way worse than what it is like here. And they are just grateful to be in a place to, you know, have a grocery store down the street. So, you know, I think the pressure you feel depends on your cultural context.
I get that. Makes a lot of sense. That's great. I guess too, because I want to get into two things, ask you questions about, like, kind of what you think is being a parent. So we can talk about, like, our parenting and talking about, like, maybe the themes in the movie about Christmas presents. But also too, I wonder if you want to talk, maybe open up a little, talk about, like, your work as a clinical psychologist. And I know you obviously, for those of you who don't know, Lauren deals specifically with children. So she's a children's psychologist, and how you see this holiday affecting them, and, like, maybe, yeah, I'd just be really interested to talk about that. So, like, first let's dive into, like, being a parent. So there's that scene in the movie where I forget the name, but Uncle Eddie's daughter's there talking to Clark after he's been looking at the infamous pool scene. But she's saying how, like, you know, last year we were good kids, and then we still, you know, Santa wasn't here and we got the shaft, I think she says. Yeah. What do you think? I struggle with that as a parent too. Like, do we tell our daughter, like, you have to be good for Santa to come? Or, like, no, I mean, I know I really don't like that. It's just not about, like, it shouldn't be about that, you know? Right. Like, I'm just curious, like, what you see when you saw that part of the movie, like, how did you know, see that?
Well, I mean, I think that part of the movie it just kind of affirmed the discouraging feeling that I have when I see the holiday surrounded by the need for gifts, because it made me sad. It made me sad to see a little kid, you know, feel like, what the heck? I didn't do anything wrong. I was a good kid and I didn't get anything. As though, like, that's the marker of whether or not you're good, how much stuff you get. And obviously I have a soft spot for kids, so that part kind of bummed me out. And you don't really expect to be too bummed out in, like, National Lampoon's movie. But
yeah.
I think that is part of why now that our daughter is just starting to be able to have some actual conversations about bigger concepts. She's 2.5, by the way.
Yeah.
Not for you, because you probably already know that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, thanks. Oh, man. I was really struggling with how old she was. She acts older sometimes. So, yeah. Thanks for letting me know. Yeah. When's her birthday coming up? Do we have to buy her something?
Or for the rest. I bought her used things for her birthday last year.
Yeah. We're winning.
Anyways, we're trying to teach her that Christmas, that the gifts are symbolic, that they're not because you earned them or didn't earn them. Just from our own religious perspective, we don't feel like anyone deserves any of those things, any like of the extra things you get in life, whether that's physical or material or not, that those are all gifts. And so I feel like trying to translate the idea of gifts to her as symbolic of the gift of Christ is how I'm trying to counteract this whole idea that, you know, Santa and being naughty or nice is what determines what you get on Christmas.
Awesome. Well, let me know how that goes. And
I think you'll be able to see it in
Oh, that's good. Okay, good. I appreciate it. You don't have to call in later when I have my live show. Okay, good. Okay, I'll be there for it. But yeah, I would really like to know how you see this materialism and consumerism affect your clients. Mm-hmm. And I know you deal with, again, you're talking about different populations. You deal with different cultures and different populations in your job. I just want to know if you wanted to, want to touch on that, because I'm curious also too. Insight into our marriage. I always don't have Lauren debrief me on like how her day goes, because you know she deals with some difficult stuff at work. And so, you know, for me personally, it's like, oh, you know, maybe I don't have to know all the details. So, but I'd like to know, yeah, just kind of what you think about some of the themes in this movie and how it relates to your work in children's psychology.
Sure. I think that the idea of needing the most new thing, the most popular item, is really difficult intergenerationally for people, immigrants that have come here whose kids are now going through this interesting acculturation process where they want to fit in with their peers, and they feel like the best way to do that is through having the right clothes or the right car. And it causes a lot of stress amongst family members. Like I said, intergenerationally, there's a lot of misunderstandings. People feeling like their kids should be grateful for what they have, and kids feeling like their parents don't understand them because they're not able to relate to peers, or feel like they have the opportunity to even get to know a peer well unless they fit in, and they do that through their buying their clothes or what have you. So I think it does cause a lot of stress there, and I think that it's just kind of that overall concept. So I don't know that this film necessarily truly highlights that.
Sure.
But just kind of that overall concept of Christmas as a consumer holiday, which we see in this movie. You know, we see him go to the mall, and we see other things happen there besides just purchasing.
Yeah, sure.
Gifts.
Can't see the line, can you, Russ? Sorry.
But yeah, we definitely, that's part of why I think this film is relevant, is because that issue hasn't gone away, or that kind of concept of Christmas hasn't gone away. And it's just a good example of materialistic focus in the world throughout the year, say in the world, in our country throughout the year.
Some line that I really, really love, and I'd like to know too if what you think too, but when the mother in the movie, Clark's wife, says, we're all making sacrifices. It's Christmas. We're all in misery. And I think I used to like, you know, this is going to sound awful, but I think I didn't understand that until I became a parent. Because you're a kid, Christmas is very much about, you know, like you're talking about the gifts and the presents and all that stuff. But there's a lot more challenges like on the parent side of things. I'm like, oh yeah, you really are making sacrifices, and we're all in misery. And so, for some reason, like, that's a line. I've been watching this movie since I was like 10. 12 or something, and I didn't get that, but now that I'm almost 30, I get that line. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I don't know what to say, except it's Christmas and we're all in misery.
And the scene where he's also talking to his wife about like their family and like what Christmas is really about, and I really liked that a lot. I like too how they're just talking about, you know, he wants a big full house, you know, and a big full, like, having the family there. And again, like, I think that's great but there's a lot that he has to have the biggest, best house in town. And if you're going to do it right, do it big. And it's just like, man, that's like, he was close. He was close, but not close enough.
Yeah, I mean, his wife tells him, you know, you set standards no one can live up to.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And yet his kid, you know, Russ is there saying, like, you know, Dad, don't you think this is a little much, you know, like the Christmas lights and what have you. And he, like you were talking about earlier, this keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing, like, he doesn't think it's too much. He thinks it's worthwhile to go out and go through thousands of bulbs to see if which one isn't working, even though we find out that's not the issue.
Sure.
and he gets so frustrated with the lights not working that he kicks the reindeer because he's like, oh, I'll just do the reindeer then. Mm-hmm. And they don't work. And he, you know, destroys them.
Yeah.
Just further highlighting, you know, money's not an issue. I'll just buy another one. You know, like, I'm going to kick this item that's perfectly good item and destroy it because I can just buy another one.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's like there's not a conscious effort to realize the consequences of our actions because these purchases are so readily available.
Sure, sure. Well, I know I've kind of strayed away from our typical template of a show that we do here on the Resistance Rewind, but there's a question that I love asking all my guests, and just because I love the hypothetical of sitting down with important people, influential people in our government, and watching movies with them, and just seeing. But would you sit down and watch this movie, maybe with our president, to kind of get across the things we're talking about here, that maybe our country is too focused on consumerism, too focused on materialism? Do you think, is this a movie you'd want to sit down with President Trump? I know I have thoughts on this. I'm just curious because, again, this is my favorite hypothetical. What would you think? Or is there something else maybe you'd rather, another movie, Christmas or not, that you'd rather maybe bring up? I'm just curious.
I would want him to watch it purely out of curiosity.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, so yeah. I sometimes tell Chad that I really, like, lucked out with my job because I'm just inherently a very nosy person. And so I've managed to make a career out of getting into people's secret business and private lives.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy observing people and figuring out kind of maybe some thought processes that are going on internally. So I would love to watch him during the scene where the boss decides, oh, okay, I'll give you your raise. Make it 20% of more than what you made last year.
Yes.
You know, like, this guy actually has some sense to say, oh, that was not actually a good idea. And I just want to see Trump's reaction because I don't have high hopes.
Sure.
For that being some sort of redeeming moment for him.
It's a common answer on this podcast. Go ahead. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Come on, son.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Clark, I think it's best if everyone just goes home before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
But it would be interesting, and I generally am an optimistic person, so there's part of me that wants to believe that if we could watch that together and then sit down and have a conversation about it afterwards, maybe also in the company of someone else he knows and values that might happen to agree.
Sure.
I don't know if there are people in his life like that, but
I can only pray.
The boss in the movie's wife is like that.
Maybe one of Donald Trump's first, second wife maybe was more like that. I don't know about the current one, but anyway, sorry.
Yep. I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah.
So I guess why not?
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to have many conversations that he would want to have, so if we could maybe have a movie to watch if I have to be in his presence, that would probably be better for me.
Well, there you go. Yeah, you'll have something to, have something to talk about. Yeah, for me, I wouldn't want you near him anyway for many reasons, but no, for me, I was the same exact scene I thought about, and I would love it if not just Trump, any president, any member of Congress, I don't care what party, I loved this scene. You know, Cousin Eddie kidnaps this, I'm not saying anybody should kidnap the president, but that, you know, he kidnaps the boss and puts him face to face with a family that he took money away from and took this joy away from. I think every member of Congress, every Supreme Court justice they need to look these people in the eye when they make this decision. Because obviously, that when in this movie we see it played out, that he takes away the bonus, he sees how it's affected this family. I mean, it's really like played for gush. You know what I mean? They're this whole family's staring at the boss, and they're sad. Yeah. The kids are sad, and the adults are mad. But I think that that's valuable though, because I think a big issue in this country, and this is, you can be a Republican or Democrat and agree with this, that our leaders are out of touch with the Clark Griswolds of the world, of our country. They're out of touch.
Yeah, anybody that's not in politics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what I've seen, you know, in the experience that I had working in the government. It's just like a lot of these people they're of a ruling class, and they very rarely get interactions with, you know, people outside of their little bubble, you know, because I worked as a congressional staffer, and I was afraid to say things that they disagreed with. So I'm not going to say like, oh, maybe you're out of touch, or maybe mm-hmm. you know, if you talk to more people like me, that you wouldn't think that way. But I was obviously afraid for my job, so I would never say something like that. But I think that they should make that decision. So next time when Trump talks about the wall again, or he's talking about deportation, or the next time he talks about nuking another country, you know, I would love it if he could do that in the face of the people it's going to affect.
Right.
So we talk about this a lot in, you know, so me being in the military and my wife being here, when Trump goes and talks about invading other countries, that affects you, and mm-hmm. that upsets you at the possibility that I might have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I would love it if he could go talk to, I said the same thing during the Iraq War, you know what I mean? Like back when I was in high school. And I would like it if the president could go and be in front of a bunch of families that he has to go send their families to war. Would he still make that decision? That doesn't mean it's a good or a bad decision, but if at the end of the day he would still make that choice, it means he's dedicated at least to the cause. I'm not saying that's a good justification, but sure. But I would love to see that face-to-face interaction. Right. So that's why I love that you brought that up too, because that's exactly what I wanted to bring up too. So,
and I think that's a important idea. I totally, obviously we're on the same page with that. On the flip side, there is a little bit of an issue I have with the idea that that's what makes the happy ending.
Yeah.
He gets his money.
That's true.
Right?
That's
like
true.
Going back to the theme. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay, you know, we're kind of adding in different components to this episode. But if we're going to kind of lean on this idea of focusing on materialism, consumerism.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
You know, the moment that the family is most united, or the first time the family is united in this film, is when they're all, you know, sitting around, or not sitting, standing around Clark, uh-huh. you know, waiting with great anticipation to see what his bonus is going to be, you know, only to sadly find out in disappointment that it's Jelly of the Month Club membership.
Oh, man, I'm dying right now. It's so good.
But then, you know, we find after that, I think it's after that, correct me if I'm wrong, the scene with the squirrel.
Yeah. It's before that.
Oh, it was before that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do see that the family can unite.
Sure, sure.
Over something not related to money. So, yeah. It's a little bit, if we're only talking about money, then maybe having the boss give all that money is not the best resolution.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But if we're talking reality here, mm-hmm. that's what a lot of people are focused on. And probably a lot of people are focused on it so that they can pay rent and buy their food.
Sure, sure.
Not so they can buy extra Christmas gifts.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Those are the people Trump should talk to.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Or
yeah.
any elected official. We're being very Trump negative right now.
I know, exactly. Yeah, poor guy. You know,
I still need us to be respectful.
It is the Christmas season, you know, and we should be generous to those that we disagree. Well, and that's the whole idea about this podcast too. We don't really want to be, and I've said this before too, like really Nick, but he's in power right now. So if this podcast came out years before, you know, we'd be talking about whoever is in charge. So that's why when I say, like, when I posit that question,
sure,
it's about like the people in charge. You know what I mean?
And bringing this film to be relevant now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, no president is going to be perfect, and all presidents are in a bubble, absolutely. But no, I think that this is, and again, it's especially when we're talking about someone that comes from his background. You know what I mean? Who comes from a business background? He very much is like, again, if he was to watch the movie, if we're being honest, he would be closely. He would relate more to the boss than he would anyone else in the movie. Let's just be honest, right? I mean, he absolutely would be. It's not like we're not here sitting here saying that if you watch Star Wars, he would, you know, hey, that Darth Vader guy had some good ideas. We're not saying that. You know what I mean? We're not saying that. We're saying that, like, he is a businessman. This movie is putting up the businessman as the villain. And you're right. It is almost tragic that, like, that he comes in and saves the day and solves the problem mm-hmm. when what the whole idea behind the resistance is we're supposed to be the change. Mm-hmm. Not if you're sitting here thinking that Donald Trump is going to make your life better, then you're wrong. If you thought Barack Obama was going to make your life better, that's not how it works. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We need to be the change we want to see. I know mm-hmm. it's a cliche at this point, but it's true. Like, you need to go out and resist in your own way. No one's going to come and give that to you. So if you're going to sit here and you're going to wait for a savior, especially in the government, to come and fix your problems, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it sucks that that's how it was in this movie. Yeah. It should have been, you know, Clark, you know, again, not making his own happiness in the sense that he's going to go and pull himself up by his bootstraps and make money. It's not
he's
that.
He's not going to go dig his own pool.
Yeah, it's exactly. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that that's the answer. What I'm saying is maybe if we were to focus more on values, you know, mm-hmm. of, you know, love and grace and all those mm-hmm. things, that maybe it would be he already has what he needs. Mm-hmm. You know, he actually is already winning and succeeding. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Maybe going. He probably would feel even better giving something instead of getting a pool. He'd probably feel better yeah. if he took all the – there was a lot of people in that house. They could have all gone and volunteered somewhere mm-hmm. and, you know, and gone out and resisted the notion that they have to buy their happiness. You know what I mean? Yeah. So anyway, so I loved talking that with you. I know you had a really good stat that you wrote down. I want you to get to this because it's funny. These are the things I don't think about, and I'm so thankful that you're in my life, about just waste. And
yeah, I mean, going back to kind of just like the black and white side of this whole consumerism thing, just the kind of factual pieces, you know, consumerism is wasteful. You know, I think the amount of electricity he uses on doing all these lights on his house, it like blows a fuse in the whole city in that one scene. And then the amount of trash that consumerism produces, that's the stat I was looking up. And the most recent stat that came up for the EPA was actually back in 2013. But at a couple different resources I was looking at, kind of ranges anywhere from 230 to 250 million tons of trash produced by the U.S. each year.
Mm-hmm.
250 million tons
Goodness gracious.
Of trash each year.
Mm-hmm.
There was another stat, not from the EPA, but it was saying that each individual produces anywhere from like 4 to 7 pounds of trash a day.
Oh my gosh.
Now I didn't do the math to see if that all adds
sure,
up.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
But think of all the food wrappers, mm-hmm. I don't know, the toilet paper, I guess.
Mountain Dew cans.
For some people.
I know, yeah.
We won't say who that is, Chad.
Taco Bell trash. Oh, my God. There's just some monsters out there, you know.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's mm-hmm. just crazy. So, you know, sell your clothes back to a consignment shop and buy your kids' clothes there because then you'll save money and help the environment.
Awesome.
Well, that's my little plug.
Awesome. I love that we're sounding like this like hippie couple.
Which know. We're so
we're
not.
We're so not. So if you don't know us, this is great. If you know us, you're like, wait, I didn't know Lauren was so right. eco-conscious.
I'm moderately eco-conscious and significantly frugal.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. That's she said that in her vows, guys. That's fantastic. I was like, oh, this is the woman for me.
I promise to always awesome. Be a cheapskate.
So also, exactly. Also speaking about things that are, things that are really shallow, our vows. Let's go.
Oh my goodness.
Let's go ahead. We've been swimming around in the deep end a lot. Let's go ahead and rest. Let's go and rest our legs and go ahead and talk about some of the shallow aspects of this movie. There are plenty to go around. Or just shallow aspects of Christmas movies in general. So that's the first question I want to ask you about is what other Christmas movies do you love? Maybe better
all
than
all of them.
Yes, there you go. No. Okay, there you go.
I have to say Elf.
Yes.
I just do because if you don't like Elf, it will make me sad for you as a person.
That's the movie we need to watch with the president because I think that's going to change him. I think that'll do it. That'll
really?
Yeah, I think if he watches Elf,
I mean,
he'll just be
magical.
So full of it is. That's what I'm saying.
It is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love it. I love like the physical comedy from mm-hmm. Will Ferrell in it.
Mm-hmm.
I love. It's just so fun. I mean, Santa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know him. It's just too good. There's too many one-liners to not love that movie. Tying it into what we've talked about, like. It's different than this movie.
It is. We were looking for an excuse to watch this movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He, you know, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Mm-hmm.
We're not spreading cheer by buying gifts. Like,
sure.
Yes, he works at the North Pole, and Santa obviously is, like, in, you know, part of the main part of the movie because it's Christmas. But it's a little different.
Sure.
Than kind of the consumer side of things. Mm. So maybe that's why I like it so much.
I love it. I was thinking maybe we can talk about it, and like Elf is like somehow like Joe Biden. I was really thinking maybe we can talk about that on this podcast, but we just didn't have enough material there. But that's a good one. I love that one.
Love it.
Love it. For me, it's not great, but I watch them every year. Home Alone 1 and 2.
Oh, they are great.
They're just so wonderful. I don't know. They're just like, again, I mean, it's
and that's nostalgia, I think, too.
For sure. Yeah, I think I was wondering if we show these to our kids, and be like, what on earth is this movie?
Yeah.
This is insane. Like, don't ever leave me at home alone. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe we should show it to them to scare them.
It's true. If I think if I put my clinical psychologist hat on, then it's not quite as enjoyable.
Yes, yes.
Because I have enough knowledge of the impact of trauma.
Yeah.
I might not think of it so fondly.
That's true.
We'll just take that hat off while I watch that movie.
Yeah, I like it. I like that. Other shallow observations that I have is, again, we talked about her a little bit, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus, like, I loved her. I love her more now than I ever have. She's just incredible. One of the first things when she announced to the world, sadly, that she has breast cancer, but her first action was to like talk about our national health care and how she has been blessed with access to good health care. And she turned it around and said, it's not about me. There's people out there that have what I have. And they don't have access to good health care. And I love that. So anyway, but I love that she's in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I just really cool. I go back. I'm like, oh, wait, I like her so much now. I forgot she was in this. I've been so into Veep and obviously Seinfeld and just like a lot of stuff that she's done since then. I was like, oh, it's kind of cool to see her in this movie. Mm-hmm. And so that was really cool. So I really wanted to bring that up. Also, I want to say that Aunt Bethany in this film.
Oh, yes. This is what I was going to say if you didn't say
it. Okay, good. She is my spirit animal. Like, she's okay. So in 2 points in the movie, if you know me and you know how like unbelievably patriotic I am. So when they ask her to say grace, she does the Pledge of Allegiance. And at the end of the movie, when the septic tank blows up, she sings the national anthem. Uh-huh. I'm like, this is my kind of woman right here. And that's
going to be you when you're old and senile.
Yes.
The only things that will come out of your memory are.
Yeah.
Like patriotic statements.
Grandpa Chad, do you want to say grace? And I pledge allegiance to the flag. That's going to be me. Oh my gosh. I had to get that out there. So do you have any other shallow observations before?
I mean, you stole my top one. Uh-huh. So I think, you know, there's little things here and there in the movie that just get you like the, like he has this non-nutritive cereal varnish.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah,
we're putting
it doesn't absorb the milk.
No food on your cereal. Or stuff that's not actually food onto your food. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm blanking right now. Sorry.
That's okay. No, we didn't talk enough about Randy Quaid steals this movie for me. I mean, Chevy Chase is solid.
Oh, my gosh. Putting the giant – they're walking through this, you know, surplus store, grocery shopping or whatever.
Yeah.
Not only does he put the giant bag of dog food and totally crush the light bulbs that Clark has just picked up, but I don't know if you noticed, through that scene, he's just progressively getting bigger and bigger bags of dog food.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
he's
got like a can and then a bag and then this massive 50-pound just nonsense.
He's just so good.
Oh, when he breaks the thing, when he breaks the windmill toy.
Okay, so I lose it. This is not a great thing to talk about on a audio medium, but there's a scene when he like goes and touches this like windmill that's like, you know, wooden and handcrafted, and he just touches it and breaks it and just like walks on like he didn't even. I could watch that scene over and over and over again, and I just love it. He's just great. At Randy Quaid, man. Like, I mean, just like between this and Independence Day, which is an awful movie, but I find myself watching it, you know, because I just love the 90s so much, you know, and just to see him in those two films, and it's sad that he's kind of lost his mind a little bit, but he will always have these movies. So, but oh my gosh, when he talks about the scene where he's just unloading his septic tank into like his front yard, Clark's front yard, and just like scares his neighbor. It just brings me so much joy. I love it so much.
Aren't you having any breakfast?
I'm not in the mood.
What are you looking at?
Oh, the silent majesty of a winter's morn, the clean, cool chill of the holiday air, and an asshole in his bathrobe emptying a chemical toilet into my sewer.
Shitter was full.
Ah, yeah. You checked our shitters, honey?
Clark, please.
But I guess the last shallow observation, it's the most important, because a lot about that we talked about here. What are you getting me for Christmas? If it's not good enough or big enough, it's going to be a problem for us. So what are you getting me for Christmas? Exactly. Yeah, do you want to disclose that here on the podcast? Or?
I am getting you something so amazing, you'll just have to wait and find out what it is then.
Awesome. I'm telling you now, I'm not getting you anything because we've talked a lot about waste.
That's true.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're getting me something, and people know it now, so you can't go back on that. But for me, I decided.
I've totally outed myself. Well, and I wasn't lying, guys. Yeah. I really do care.
I was going to get you something really big and important, too, but you got to me in this podcast. I think you really turned my mind around about consumerism and waste and things like that. So I think I'm just going to – I'll sit this one out.
Do you know what I got you? Mm. I'll tell you. Okay. I decided I'm ready to tell you.
Okay.
I gave you that lesson in life.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All
right. I taught you the importance of not spending money and of focusing on what really matters.
And I appreciate that, but I have an Amazon wish list, and I won't feel accomplished until it's everything on there. And there's some really great DVDs.
See, I find we're getting into a whole like marriage conversation that perhaps our listeners don't need to hear.
Is that not why you guys tuned in?
They didn't want to hear a married couple discuss.
Yeah, I'm going to completely
the relevance of.
I'm going to completely change the premise of this podcast. We're just going to watch movies and relate to how they affect our marriage.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, that'd be good. I know you'll like that more.
Perfect. Yeah. Every week, I'll be there.
Exactly. Yeah, either that or politics. Just tune in next month and find out what we'll be talking about. But really, though, thank you so much for joining the Resistance here. Check in next month to see what we'll actually be reviewing and relating to our culture. But we want to hear from you guys. So things maybe Christmas movies you love, any great responses we get, and maybe movies that you can tie them into our culture. If you have a response, I'll read it out loud next month when we're all maybe ready to be over with Christmas, but we'll talk about it anyway. Send those thoughts to overthinkpod@gmail.com. And we also, the Overthink on all social media platforms, we're out there and we really want to interact with you guys. So thank you so much for joining the Resistance. And Lauren, thank you so much for joining me. This is fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, what an ideal date night. Just sit here and talk about Christmas movies with your husband. So, I mean, with my wife. All right.
It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.